Yes, welcome to the NBA panel. Sports journalists come and go. Very few blaze and trail leaving. Very few blaze leaving a trail with their mark throughout their career. Today, I'm honored to be once again joined by Robert Scoop Jackson. Scoop, what's going on?
Ed, man, trying to maintain, getting over the All-Star weekend, the Super Bowl, all that back-to-back stuff, trying to settle into the next phase. It always goes in phases, so just trying to settle up
Yes.
for the next phase, for the next runs. Now it's NCAA time, so.
Yes, March Madness right around the corner. Can't wait
Right,
for it.
exactly.
Yeah, the Super Bowl lit up to the hype. The All-Star game. Bro, an All-Star game was crazy in a bad way, I believe. Almost
Yeah,
400.
well, this ain't, but this, come on, man, this ain't nothing new.
Yeah, very true.
And that's the problem. It's been continual. It's been continual. There's a lot of factors going into that, and I think this is really something the NBA really needs to find a way to take a look at. And I don't really have any direct answers.
Right.
I just got through doing a column on it for the Sun-Times last week about the apathy that
Right.
seems to like hover over, the play in the All-Star game. Not necessarily the whole weekend, but definitely the play and,
Yeah.
from a competitive standpoint and how it's affecting the event, having some type of special significance, which is losing and losing and losing. And I don't know if there's one particular thing the NBA needs to do to change that, because I think it's deeper than just money. And I don't know. It's sad to see it go down this way, but it's sadder that you and I can sit up here and talk about it, and we can have Adam Silver on the conversation. We have Mark Tatum. We could have whoever we want. We
Right.
have LeBron in the conversation, and who's gonna come up with an answer for what needs to be done to reverse the direction it seems like All-Star Weekend is going?
Right. One idea thrown around was that the winner will get home court advantage in the finals. I don't think that'd be fair to the teams that play hard all season to get that. Because the best record gets home court advantage throughout the playoffs. I think that wouldn't be fair to that team that basically does what they have to do at home and on the road to get that advantage, to have it given up by players that might not want to play in an All-Star game at a high level.
And here's the deal, you're also dealing with situations that have injuries attached to it.
True.
Like, it's cool if Philadelphia is punished for Embiid not being there, but it's not cool for every other team in the East, you know what I'm saying, to have to deal with one person's injury in an All-Star game that's going to directly affect what happens to them or their conference throughout the entire playoffs.
Right.
That ain't cool. And also, that's going to be a hard sell to get past with the union involved. Players
True.
Association ain't gonna deal with that.
Right.
The one thing, now I will share this with you though, man. And I don't know if this does it. I think there's some deeper things at play, but my wife and I were having a conversation, and we came up with maybe something that can be approached, at least worth discussing, I think, on a league level to at least gain greater interest. Is that if you look at how the NBA has shifted to where the All-Star game is now, it's kind of
Right.
floated like either before or right around Valentine's Day, right? Now, since the NFL has added an extra week,
Right.
NBA has shifted, the week of the All-Star game to not go up against the Super Bowl, to not have that fight, to give the NBA, I mean, to give the NFL the space, and then piggyback off of that. It's always kind of been that way for the most part, correct?
Right, correct.
Okay. So if you look at how many games are left in the NBA season,
Like 32.
okay, they call it the mid-season classic. It's supposed to be a split in mid-season. It's not mid-season.
Right.
It's like two-thirds of a season have gone, damn it, maybe a fourth, you maybe have a fourth of a season left, whatever.
Right.
If the NBA can convince the NFL to take an extra week off between regular season and beginning their postseason,
Right.
they can move the All-Star game right on the weekend of Dr. King's birthday, and they could take care of their social initiative. and have that entire King weekend, and then it leads into King's holiday, which is something the NBA cares about that honestly the NFL could be like, whatever.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So they
Right.
could tie into all the social initiatives, engage that way during the weekend, have some seriousness to the game because you can attach money to whatever you raise for that game, to whatever social awareness group, whatever they want to, and still it's in the vein of Dr. King. So that gives us a bigger purpose, right?
Right.
And then the rest of y'all can do whatever you want to on King's holiday, which is celebrated that Monday.
That's a good idea, bro.
And at
Honestly.
The same time, you're closer to having 40 games left in the season. So it's split mid-season, right?
Very true.
The next weekend, the NFL can have their, you know, wild card play and all that can happen, right?
Yes.
Then they get an extra week off or so for the Super Bowl.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Honestly.
You know what I'm saying? And then, but then here's the thing, and the NFL could do what they've been trying to do, is they shift the Super Bowl 1 week, give it one more week, and
right.
have that the weekend before President's Day, so they don't have to make that Monday, which they've been talking about, a holiday for after the Super Bowl. People already
right.
had that Monday off, so just have the Super Bowl every Sunday before President's Day. If they
Yeah.
can make that little shift, it works out for everybody.
That's actually a good idea. The runs by Adam Silver, honestly, because he wanted to change and he didn't get it. He thought he was gonna have a better game. It didn't happen.
No, but there has to be an extra right. To me, it works out, but you have to have the NFL buy-in, and the buy-in has to come from the NFL. To me, first and foremost, is instead of trying to find a way to publicly make the Monday after Super Bowl a national holiday, just align the Super Bowl with President's Day, and you have all that patriotism, all that lineup, that national holiday, you know, it's there. It's right there for you. It's just a matter of a shift. But you
right.
can make that shift if you give them an extra week before the playoffs start. Give teams time to heal, and that could be the week that the NBA slides in and makes it their All-Star weekend. But it's all predicated on the NFL to go for it. Because if the NFL doesn't go for it, then the NBA doesn't have a chance because they're fighting against it. It has to be predicated on the NFL making that shift.
Yeah, the NFL is a monster of its own. A whole different
you don't
monster.
want to fight it. You don't want to go up against them. And and there has to be some initiative to that for them. And to me, the initiative to make them go for it is they don't have to make that public push to try to create a national holiday in the month of February.
Right.
Because, you know, for the nation to take off, because it's there. Nobody goes to work anyway. So they're already like, it's a de facto national holiday. So they already have it plugged into the system. So the businesses across the country are not losing money. You
Right.
tie it into a holiday that's already in the same month. But if, without already losing money anyway, you know what I'm saying? So it's a two birds with one stone scenario that you could present to the NFL and
Yeah.
make it happen.
Def could. Something gotta happen, definitely. One aspect of the also we can always look forward to was the dunk contest, which has been the same since 2016. LaVine and Gordon, they spoiled us, and it's like no one can live up to that because we don't have players like John Morant. Zach LaVine's been hurt, but he doesn't want to be in anymore. We need players like Zad Ablee to bring back the dunk contest to make it more competitive. Because the dunks we see are going to be, we won't see the same dunks to an extent, but certain players have more athleticism and it's more exciting. And just the name alone can make a difference in the dunk contest.
See, I think it's bigger than that. I you know, because to keep in mind, it's not like Zach LaVine and Eric Gordon were big time all-star basketball players, you know, at the time. They just happened to have a great, great, great impulse to use their creativity
Right.
on that platform. You know what I'm saying? So I think that benefited them, but I don't think it was about name recognition. I think the NBA has a bigger problem than name recognition, because if they're really looking at this the way they should, their bigger problem should be the last dunk contest winner for 2 years in a row isn't even in the NBA. That's
Yeah.
a problem. That has nothing to do with name. That's like nobody in your league has even won this contest for the last 2 years. That's the bigger problem. So first, let's address the fact that somebody that's not even in the NBA is the double up champion of this contest. Can you just get somebody in the NBA, regardless of their name, to be the champion? Because if somebody that's not even in the league is the champion of this, that's a problem. That's
True.
a huge problem for the league itself. Then I think, you know, you start dealing with like getting the Zions and the Jaws and the, you know, whoever, you know, the Derrick Joneses against the Obi Toppin, whatever, you know, I think then you get into that. But the problem you're going to have with that is it's not that I don't think big name players want to, are afraid of losing, which seems to be the narrative. They don't want to go up against these cats. I think to kind of what you said about Zach and Aaron is that the winners for the most part of dunk contests have had to fight their way through being pigeonholed as that being who they are. Them not
Got you.
being complete basketball players. And that goes back to like back in the like when the dunk contest first started. When you had the Darnell Hillmans and the Larry Nance, the original Larry Nances and the Terrence Stansberries. You
Right.
had cats that would show up great, or even the Spud Webbs or the Nate Robinsons. You know, you go collectively through there, you look at the people who have participated at a high level consistently in a dunk contest, and how that title has been one they have not been able to shake. Hell,
Right.
Dominique Wilkins to this day is still fighting, trying to get the entire league, even though he's a top 75 player, Hall of Fame player, but because of his performances in the dunk contest, people still look at him as, oh, he was just a one-dimensional ball player.
Right.
And if you look at the history of the dunk, like I said, I could start the Kenny Walkers, all them cats that got titles and all that, they've been whole careers not being looked at as complete ball players. Hell, that's part of Vince Carter that's still fighting that. So now you're dealing with a stigma, right? Now you're dealing with a stigma where you're like, no, I don't want to be looked at as that. You know, you have to get to Kobe Bryant levels. You know what I'm saying? You have to be greatest all time level to remove that stigma from your
Yes.
career. Zach LaVine has somewhat been able to do that, and Aaron Gordon has got himself on the championship squad where he's playing the role. He's been able to do that. But look
Right.
how hard it is for everybody else to have to do that. So, you know, while people are talking about name recognition, I'm looking at the fact that there's a reason why these cats aren't getting in it. You know what I'm saying? They're like, we don't want this because it's not a good thing.
Right.
And once you get that title placed on you, that's a hard thing to shake.
Yeah, people keep saying why LeBron never won it. LeBron didn't join for a reason. LeBron is arguably one A in NBA history's greatest player ever in NBA. Like, my favorite is Jordan, obvious reasons. But there's a reason LeBron didn't jump in the dunk contest. Never have.
Well, I think there's other reasons besides what we just discussed with LeBron. And I get it. You know, LeBron is very, very protective of his brand. And he doesn't want himself, he don't want to put himself in the situation where he won't come out shining. I'll put it that way.
Got you.
I don't think it's about the win. He just does not want to come out not shining, and that's not good for him. And not saying that he can't, but the risk reward for him to get involved with it
Right.
doesn't really do anything for the business of LeBron. For the cultural aspect of his legacy, yes, it does.
Right.
But for the business of LeBron's always been about business. That hasn't been smart. My only problem with LeBron is, and it's funny nobody's brought this back up on tape. I can't remember exactly what year, but he told Cheryl Miller during one of these All-Star Saturdays, told her on camera, next year I'm getting in the dunk contest. He said it to Cheryl Miller on TNT, and nobody's held his feet to the fire for that. I don't blame him not getting in it. I get that. But don't say you're going to do something, claim it publicly, and then back off without an excuse.
Right.
You know, you need to be like, hey, yo, dude, you said this last year. Now, what happened? And you can at
Right.
least say, man, I changed my mind. I did it. But at least you have to give us a reason because you stood on your square and said, I'm going to do this. But
Yes.
it's amazing how the media gave him a pass on that. Amazing. And public. It's not just the media. Social media gave him a pass on that too. Because social media can find whatever they want to.
Yes, they can. Yes. Social media is a whole detective when it wants to be.
Man. Man.
Totally.
If they knew how to follow up their detective work with something of substance, man, they'd be amazing.
Yes, definitely. Yes. Backing up to Dominic Wilkins, you've been working with him recently on this documentary. Also, you've been working with the Iceman. You've been doing great. You stay busy, bro. You stay busy. You run us down about your projects you've been working with?
Yeah, well, George Iceman, the book Ice, Why I Was Born to Score, is basically his autobiography that we worked on for the last 2 years. It came out in October. So glad to get that story out. Honored to be a part of that. It's always, I will say it's always nice because it doesn't happen very often that you get calls from those guys or
Yeah.
those, guys of that stature that want you to help shape and tell their journeys. So the year and a half George and I spent together putting this book together is very, very special. And I'm very proud, not just of the book itself, but the fact that he was able to get his story out the way he felt his story should be told. And it's a very unique and different read in that to me it's more about life than it is his life. You
Okay,
know,
gosh.
you're looking at a wise individual who's been through a lot. His journey is very understandable, very relatable. But what came out of that journey was a human being that has a vision on life that I think everybody needs to embrace to a certain degree. You know, his look on humanity, his look on spirituality, his
Right.
look on what we all can be and what we all need to learn as human beings. Is a bigger story than just his life, but he's telling that story through the context of what he had to live through in his own life. So, I think it's just a I think it's a really special and beautiful read. Nothing scandalous, nothing no bombs dropped, no none. It's not that type of book because his life wasn't that type of journey. It's
Right.
very, very measured, very level. It's almost like reading, it's almost like a spiritual read where you read with something like the Quran or the Bible, where it's very, very measured and wants you to walk away with something bigger than what it actually is that you're reading.
Right.
Not that I'm comparing that to anyone's. I'm just trying to give you the feel of how, I believe this the book is once you experience it as a read. So yeah. So it's very, very, very special to be able to go through that and build with him on that and spend that time with him on that. And the Dominique Wilkins, project, I got pulled in basically because of that.
Right.
From what my understanding is that Neek put a call in to George because there's a central figure involved in telling Neek's story and telling George's story. And George, told him how great the experience of dealing with me and telling the story was for him.
That's
And
what's up.
I don't know. I knew and know George. Because
Right.
I've done stories on George in the past, and we built somewhat of a relationship over the course of years, just seeing each other at All-Star games, at whatever events, and chopping it up, that nephew kind of uncle type feel,
Gotcha.
but I've never had the privilege of really doing anything or spending any time with Neek. So Neek was more of a blind situation coming in, but on the
Okay.
basis of George co-signing. For our experience, Neek's people reached out to me about possibly doing a book with him.
Right.
And I'm like, yeah, if he's down to do with it, let's sit down and talk. And but somehow that book conversation turned into a film opportunity.
Okay.
So, discussions about film are always gonna take precedence over books. It's the it thing for storytelling right now, and then there's much more money involved in film, telling film stories than there are telling book stories, especially non-novels. That conversation took precedence over that, and that ball got rolling a lot faster than the book conversation did. And I was involved with those same individuals on that project. So they're like, hey, we're going to attach you as, you know, script writer to this as well, you know, and we'll get to the book conversation later on. Let's just deal with this film conversation since it seems to be moving a lot
Right.
faster than the book conversation. And, you know, we're in the process. I don't want to say we're, because I'm really kind of on the outside of this. They're in the process of shopping, you know, because we've got the treatment done, outline done, the sizzle reel is done. You know, now they're like lining up conversations with different streaming outlets and, you know, and distributors for
Right.
ownership of the film and who's going to finance it and do this, that, and the other. So that's, I'm out of those conversations. That's with the production company and Neek's, you know, people and all this, that, and the other. I'm just sitting
Right.
on the back end ready to get that call and say, let's go to work. So we start lining up how we're going to do this and get the director attached to the project that they want attached to it. And they're interviewing directors and all. So all that stuff is going
Right.
on the front end. I'm
Right.
just sitting on the back end. You know, Nick just sent me a tweet last week. How's the script going? I'm like, it's ready to go. You know,
Right.
it's like once the financing gets signed, man, we're good to go. Let's go.
Yes. Yes, man. Your hard work has put your name in rooms you're not in. That's what it's about, man. Connecting with
And
people.
the approach that I took on building the treatment and building the outline for the film is an interesting one, and I think one that's going to be unexpected by anybody. I took a bigger picture look at
Right.
telling each story, you know, because the one thing you get when you're dealing with people about the whether this person or whether this person's story or whether this project is going to have a viable audience, whether
Right.
it's going to generate, you know, interest and income for those who are investing in it. You know, a lot of that, I believe, is not just the subject matter, but the angle you take on how you're going to tell that subject matter story, or the angle
Yes.
you take on the story itself, and how is it going to move people. And, you know, we're in a day and age where, you know, people are looking for immediate shock value because that immediate shock value generates interest.
Yes.
And, you know, there's nothing, you know, there's no big shocking situation that's really happened in Dominique's life that's going to be like, oh yeah, here's where we're going to pinpoint the story and let's tell it here. You know what I'm saying? There's no pivotal moment that's going to like, oh, millions of people are going to engage in this because they're waiting for this part of the story. You know,
Right.
because his career and his life is not like that. But taking the perspective that I thought was like interesting was the fact that, oh, I never looked at Dominique's career that way. You
Right.
know what I'm saying? It's like, oh, this is amazing. You know what I'm saying? And try to
Yeah.
build it up from that angle.
Yes.
You know, build it up from that angle. Then, you know, I could tell you publicly that I just throw it out there that one of the angles, one of the strong angles we took is one that nobody really took into consideration. If you had to look at Atlanta, the city, and what the ATL has become over the last 20 years.
Right.
Tell me the role, tell me somebody bigger in shaping that city becoming what it's become than Deion Sanders and Dominique Wilkins. Name me one.
Oh, the top can't. You can't. Those two are instrumental.
That's it. You know what I'm
Yes.
saying? That's it. And the difference between the two is guess who left and guess who stayed there? Dion left. You know what I'm saying? Dion was with the Falcons for how many years? He with the Braves, did his thing. They are the first, they are the celebrities
Right.
on which the ATL was built off of. And no disrespect to like Cameo and Anita Baker, you know, and if you don't need us from Detroit, you know, and Babyface, you know, who's from Ohio or Indianapolis, but they built the Hall of Fame thing, you know, but and what they did, or you know, Dallas Austin and all them cats that like really musically built Atlanta.
Right.
Dominique and Dion were the foundation from Atlanta turning into the ATL.
Yes.
So,
Yes.
and everybody you talk to will attest to that. He was the celebrity that really gave Atlanta a foundation of transferring and making the ATL the ATL.
Yes.
So when you look at it from that angle, you're like, damn, I didn't think about that. Now you think of who's involved in Dominique's story. from that standpoint. You got
Just
everybody from Mayor Andrew Young to Governor, you know, Warnock to Stacey Abrams to Usher, Jermaine Dupri, T.I., Lil Jon. Everybody was on stage the Super Bowl. All of them be like, nah, Neek was the, you know what I'm saying? He was our superstar.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Andrew Young, you know, everybody. They're like, no, Neek was it. Neek was it. So, yeah, there's that angle of his story that hasn't been told, and that's one of the angles we're taking on telling the story. It's like, not that shock value thing, but when you look at it, like, damn, I never really looked at it that way, you know? Right. Yeah, and everybody you talk to is like, no, Neek built this thing. You know what I'm saying? Which is a part of the story that nobody told. So that's part of the things that we're doing in here.
Yeah, I can't wait for this, bro. It's going to be hot.
Right,
bro.
Exactly. Right. Right.
Yeah, so my personal experience, speaking to greats is always a pleasure and an honor. I had the pleasure of speaking to Dominique previously before Sean Kemp, Gary Payton, and speaking to him is surreal. I mean, looking at him, I was looking at him on TV. They were my idols growing up, looking at them ball. I love NBA from the beginning. How is it for you, from your perspective, connected with the greats and learning their story?
Man, it's one of those situations where you never think about it, so you never prepare for it when it happens. And, you know, you put work in,
right,
not for those things to happen.
Right.
But you damn sure put work in to put yourself in position for those things to happen, because if you look at the game, you know they're going to happen.
Yeah.
You know, so it's a funny thing to know that you earned something to be, but be humbled.
Exactly.
By the exact same time.
Exactly. I never get ahead of myself below. Gotta stay at that level. Gotta stay at that level and keep going.
Yeah, you do. You do. And to me, for me, when situations like this happen, you understand how blessed you are for them to happen to you, because there's so many other people that can happen to.
Right.
You know, and you understand the fortune, but you also understand that you worked your ass off to get yourself in position for this to happen. So it's not necessarily luck. It's a blessing, but it's not luck.
Right.
The thing that always, for me, overrides all of that is once the project lands in your possession.
Right.
Once the project lands in your lap, once the project becomes your responsibility, all of that goes out the window, because now you have to own up to the project. Now you have to make the project the project.
Yes.
Your name attached to it means nothing. Now you have to be like, all right. And in this particular case, like we're dealing with Dominique Wilkins, you know, film, you know, it's part of my job to make sure that this film has relevance.
Right.
It's my job to make sure that George Gervin's book has relevance.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? That it's not just, oh, this is some, you know, this can be overlooked. This is some trash. That you know, 10 years down the line, 20 years down the line, you know,
right,
this still mentioned. Not with, like, you know, there's only so much you control. It has, oh, this is one of the great, you know, autobiographies or memoirs ever written.
Right.
That's subjective, and you don't have any control over that. But you can approach the project in a way that it still has meaning years later down the line.
Right.
And that the person that the story is about in these particular situations is comfortable and happy that they chose you to do it, and they stand with pride on it, and that their family stands with pride on it. That you want George Gervin's kids and you want George Gervin's grandkids to be like, yo, this is my dad's story. You know, this is my granddad's book. You know, you want Dominique Wilkins, you know, son who just went to Georgia, going to Georgia, you know, going to wear his number 21, that when his father's film comes out, he stands proud speaking about the film.
Right.
So, and a lot of that has to do with what you do now that they put that project in your, you know, now that you have some responsibility of how the outcome of that project is going to be.
Right.
So all the humbling, all that earned stuff, all that goes out the window, because now it's like, all right, I got to make sure, you know, I don't fail this project. You know,
Right.
and it's Spike Lee to me said it best, and not that I'm talking about or we're talking about anything on this magnitude,
Right.
but he said it best when they greenlit him doing Malcolm X's film. He said, the only thing I thought was I cannot fuck this up. And that's really all it boils down to. You know what I'm saying?
Yes,
I
yes.
cannot fuck this. It ain't gonna be on me. You know what I'm saying? If this doesn't come out the right way. And that's kind of the approach you have to approach that. That's kind of the approach you have to have when these you're blessed enough to have projects of these
Yeah.
individuals fall, you know, into your hands and you're responsible for them to a certain degree.
Yes. And also your newest book about Iceman is going to draw a picture of him on the court. A lot of people didn't see or didn't follow him because he was graceful on the court. I mean, from the fan role, he was an artist in the air also, like Mike.
Yeah, he was an artist, you know, and a lot of things in the book would tell you, like, once again, like the diamond, there's deeper stories inside of there. It's not just, you know, what he was able to do, but, you know, for him to be the first, you know, when they moved him from forward to guard and just that small change and what's that done for the game, and people need to look back at how him being 6'7", 6'8", changed the entire way the game was played from that guard position.
Right.
Because after that, here comes Magic. You know
Yes.
what I'm saying? After that, here comes Penny Hardaway. After
Yeah.
that, here comes Tracy McGrady's. You know, after that, here comes everybody. You know, the guard position changes because now
Yeah.
you got cats at 6'7" and larger playing the guard game. And who was the first cat? Oscar Robertson was 6'5". Yeah, but that 6'7" is a big difference.
Yes. Yes. Yes,
You
it is.
know, and all of a sudden, you took a small forward and put him at the guard position because he still had those handles and he had that range that guards don't have. It changes everything.
Yes.
It changes the entire game. So now, you know, the where if you look back at the game, all the Bernard Kings and the Larry Birds and the Julius Irvings, you know, the Marcus Johnsons, the Mark McGuires, the Adrian Dantleys, the Alex Englishes, I can go down the line. All of those cats were small forwards. And that was
Yes.
the transition from the center. You know, the centers used to be, all the scoring used to be done by centers for the most part. You know, and then if you look at all those players I just mentioned, they all were scoring from the small forward position.
Right.
Ice was that one guard who changed all of that. Because after Ice started scoring at that position, torched the path to that dude named Jordan.
Yes.
And
Right.
everything changed from there. So, you know, you're looking at not only a cat who, like, you know, his game was a work of art, you're looking at a pioneer of sorts.
Yes.
You know, you're looking at a pioneer for how the game is transitioning and being played to this day because of him being the one to shift
Yes.
way people score, but at the position in which they score. You know, and him doing it in an era where he was unique and a unicorn in that. You know, now you add to the fact that the size factor,
Right.
how the game when players are putting on muscle and putting on bulk and putting on strength and being able to score and sustain it. Well, you had a guy that was, you know, 6'8", you know, barely 200 pounds, you know, doing it while cats are being physical with him.
Right.
You know, in the day and age where it was hands-on defense, you know, where they weren't allowed to play zone defense, and he was still getting buckets
Right.
at 35 a clip without really using the three-point line, but still stretch, you know, scoring from 25 feet and out. And the
Yeah.
next player come along, that there had been no player at that even size and framework to score at that clip until Kevin Durant came along. And Kevin Durant's like, that's me.
Right.
He's growing up in the DMV, and everybody he keeps hearing is comparing his game to as a child is the guy named George Gervin, who he has not seen play.
Right.
So when he finally, you know, gets and does that YouTube dive into who's the George Gervin when he's 10, 11 years old, he finally sees himself as
Right.
a tall, skinny kid's like, oh wow, nah, my game makes sense because now I get to see it.
Yes.
You know, so Look at the now you look at the players after that. You look at Porzingis like, no, I try to follow KD. That's who my game's after. You know, hell, you look at somebody that ain't even KD's side. Anthony Edwards is like, my whole game, I'm trying to be like this dude.
Right.
You look at Victor Wembanyama. I'm trying to be like everybody, like I'm watching Kevin Durant.
Right.
He's that guy, but who did Kevin Durant pattern his game off though? That one player.
Yeah, so Dorman.
You know what I'm saying? So it's that George Gervin story is a little bit different, man, when you take the context and look at the impact that he's had.
Right.
You say it's not, there's no one gotcha moment, but it's a like, oh, you know, this dude really. You don't really understand. It's so much more than just his finger roll. It's so
Right.
much more than these scoring titles. You know, it's so much more, you know, it's so much more to this, you know. So it's the layers of that make it so beautiful. You
Right.
know, yeah. No, so that's that. And once again, when guys like that call you and ask you to tell their journeys. They're asking you to find those pockets, to find
Right.
those angles, to find those chapters in their lives that have always been overlooked because their careers have been reduced to something that's minuscule.
Right.
Like they've reduced George Gervin's entire career to one shot. You know, like they career, like they reduced Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, you know, Kareem's whole career to that sky hook, as if that's all he did. You know what I'm saying? Like
Right.
they try to reduce Dr. J's career down to dunks and Dominique's career down to like, oh, all he could do was dunk. You know, same
Right.
thing to Vince Carter. You know, is this a, you know, the same way basically that that we're watching happen right now where they're reducing Steph Curry's entire career to him being the greatest shooter ever. As if, you know, that's his entire, you know, like, come on now. But
Right.
that's what society and that's what the media does. So when these guys tap you on the shoulder or ring your phone and ask you to tell their stories, it's your job to be as comprehensive as possible,
Right.
you know, to tell their full stories, to tell their full life stories. Because if you leave it up to society at large in these moments, they're going to
Yeah.
reduce entire stories to something very singular, which could be a
Yes.
slogan or a shot or whatever. You know, but that's what society is. Look, man, and they tried to reduce Dr. King's entire career down to one speech. So hell, you know, if they do it to Dr. King, you know what I'm saying? They go do it, they
Yeah.
do it to anybody.
Yes. And you do a phenomenal job. That's why they reached out to you. Phenomenal job.
Thank
The
you, man.
second half of the season is here. You're next, fourth in the East. They made some great acquisitions. I like the acquisition of Bojan. He can get you 30 points on any given night. Any given night. And Julius Randle hopefully comes back. They're gonna be a whole problem. A whole problem. Yes, sir. Yes.
Got my rep right there.
I gotta say, man, I started covering the Knicks, man. Madison Square Garden. The experience is unforgettable, bro. The fans
Yeah.
out here, they walk MSG. It's
Yeah.
crazy, bro.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Here's the thing that bothers me though, is as much as it, you know, as I and I look, I'm back in you know, I'm back in reconciliation to a certain degree for the Knicks, with the Knicks, you know. And a large part of that, there's a leg because I had divorced myself from Knicks. We had gone to divorce court.
Right.
I got me a little side chick, you know, a side team on the scene. You know what I'm saying? I got my
Right.
little pool on the side. Like, I'm like done. I was done with them. We were done. But it you know, because I can't, you know, I can't like ride with Dolan. I just, you know, I can't. And I think he's done everything in his power as an owner to try to like I'll say it nicely, show that this team
Right.
is not a priority to him. That's as nice as I can be in saying that. But, you know, what you did in the front office, especially getting Worldwide West in there,
Right.
who, you know, I love to death, bringing Tibbs over, who I love to death. I mean, I love Tibbs to death, even though I don't agree with everything he's done, like, especially with the Knicks. I agree with everything he did in Chicago, but that's a whole nother story we can get on.
Right.
You know, and I've loved and known Jalen Brunson since he was in high school. You know, and dad is my guy, but I've known Jalen because he's from this area. He's from the Chicago area, so I watched him all through high school at Stevenson. And matter of fact, you know, I remember when ESPN assigned me to do a McDonald's All-American story in his senior year, and he was my story.
Right.
Like, I was like, no, I'm not going to do a story on the game. I'm going to do a story on the one guy who right now at this point has the whole history of Chicago basketball. And he's going to be the last great Chicago area basketball player because at the time we were coming off Derrick Rose, Jabari Parker, Khalil, who, why am I missing, messing my names up? Anthony Davis, and who won the national championship? Why am I forgetting my man's name? For Duke.
Something on mine right now. Something on mine.
Yeah. Went to Whitney Young. Got drafted by the Sixers. Played at Jahlil. What's his name? Oh, Jesus.
Jahlil Okafor.
Yeah, Jahlil Okafor. Okay, right. So yeah. If you look at Derrick Rose, you look at AD, you look at JP, and you look at Jahlil Okafor. All of them were number one high school players of their class coming out. All out of Chicago. There was a string we had of Chicago ball players like, yo, technically we running it, right?
Right.
The last of that bunch to even make a McDonald's All-American squad was Jalen Brunson. So I looked at that. Once again, it's about angles, right? It's about angles
yeah.
and how you want to tell stories. So I looked at the bigger picture from a Chicago perspective, how Chicago was producing the best high school ball players over that period of time, or that decade or whatever. You know what I'm saying? It's like we were on top. And there was nobody, we had a little gap, but there was nobody down the line that was being talked about like that. And not that Jalen Brunson was the top high school basketball player in the country, but he was definitely top high school basketball player in the Chicago area and the only one on that McDonald's All-American team. And I'm like, he's the last of the Chicago era. So I did a story on him then and basically putting that he's the last great Chicago area ball player of this era. So you keep in mind, you got to really, really love somebody. You know what I'm saying? To tell ESPN, no, I'm not doing a national story. I'm doing a local story because this kid is it at that
right.
time. So you factor all that in, all of them like on the Knicks right now. So as a Knicks fan, yeah, I went back to the divorce court and asked, you know, for a renege. Like, look, can I, you know, can I slide the ring on here real quick? You know, can we at least like cohabitate? You know, can we like, you know, can we go to, you know, co-parenting right now? can we do like Will and Jada at least live together while we going through the separation or whatever? Can I get back with my Knicks to some degree? You know.
Yes.
So yeah, no, I'm at least back in the same household. We ain't sleeping in the same room yet, but we, you know, I'm back in the same crib with the Knicks right now.
Yes, and with the way the East is set up, with NBA out for foreseeable future, Knicks can gain some ground, and the Bucks are in the transition with Doc Rivers now. I think they're like 3-7 with Doc Rivers now, I believe.
Go ahead.
What do you think about that, dude? The move they did with Griffin. They said it was a player, I mean, mostly a player's decision, but they seem to be doing better with Griffin than with Doc. But everything's a transition period, so we'll see how the rest of the season.
Okay, let's do this, and this is the way I want to look at it. I think there are bigger problems with Milwaukee than we're just talking about, and I don't think, no disrespect, I don't think it was a player's decision. I think the players were cool with whatever decision management brought to the table. You know, and I think if there's one player who had the juice to draw the line in making that decision happen, it was Giannis.
Right.
But I think Giannis, I don't think Giannis was one to say, you need to make this decision now. I think he's like, we need to really probably look at making, maybe a coaching change at the end of the year. Let's see how this goes. But right now, there's probably going to need to be a change. I'm down whatever way y'all want to do it or when you want to do it. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And I think management therefore went into conversations to reach out to Doc Rivers and say, hey, if we make this move, would you be interested in doing this? Or if this came about, would you be interested in doing that? And once they
Right.
got that okay, the doc is like, yeah, I'll come down. Then they're
Right.
like, okay, well, let's follow the code of we don't get rid of a coach unless you have a coach in mind,
Right.
especially
True.
in the middle of the season.
Right.
So if we
True.
can make this coaching change now, yeah, we'll do it. And they probably went back to like Giannis, hey man, if we can get Doc Rivers, are you cool with that? And Giannis like, yeah,
Yeah.
I'm cool. Whenever y'all do it, I'm good with that. Nothing against Adrian, but there needs to be a change from the way things are going right now. Now, I'll say two things. One, the reason I'm not tripping on there's two reasons I'm not tripping on Doc's record coming in.
Right.
And the first is I don't want to make the mistake that everybody in the media did by jumping on situations as is, which leave us in the media. Not saying I did it, but jumping on situations as is where you become ass out. And
Gotcha.
I'm saying that because just recently, when the Clippers got James Harden
Yes.
and they started off 0-6, and nobody
Yeah.
in the media gave it like, oh, this, all this, they all jumped on that as is situation.
Right.
And now what is they didn't give it a chance. And what how's that looking now?
Yes.
How did that narrative the media jumped on as is? How did where?
Yes,
You
it turns
know
into play.
how they were, and everybody on the Clippers was like, hey, just give us time, give it time.
Right.
But nobody wants to listen to ball players because, of course, we're the experts on this shit.
Yes.
And,
Yes.
like, time proved that, hey, we'll get it together. This
Yes.
isn't the NBA at this level is not instant grits. You don't pour water on it and get to eat. And at no time in my life have I ever had instant grits taste better than real grits? You know what I'm saying? You get the real grits, the grandma grits,
Yes.
not even that 5-minute quick or old quick grits. I'm talking about the real grits.
Yes.
You know that difference.
Yes.
So
And
it's
clip.
the same thing applies here. Like, yo, give it time.
Yes.
Give it time to make this thing work because you all want things like this. And you all are painting a narrative like because it's not happening like this, there's
Right.
something you're not given a chance to grow.
Right.
I don't want to fall into the same trap that we just got through happening. But the problem is there's so many of us in the media and in social media that are so ignorant that we don't even learn from our immediate past lessons. Like you would think with
True.
what just happened with the Clippers that we should all be like, hold on, give this thing, give it space to work itself out. We're
Right.
not even doing that. And this just happened like a month or two ago.
Yes.
We don't learn anything. But the second thing I think we need to read into, which we're not doing as a public, as a media, and as pundits on social media, is looking at what's really happening inside of the Dame Lillard situation as he got here to Portland. And taking into consideration all that has to go into what the beginning of the Milwaukee Bucks season has been like. You're letting go of a coach that has been there and been there for years, and a lot of what he left is still there in
Right.
Milwaukee, correct? So not
Yeah,
only
but
are you losing him, but you're bringing in a coach that this is his first time head coaching job. He's still connected to the organization, but this is still his first time doing this. Now, he's doing it with a team that is pretty comfortable with one another, but that team lost their secondary coach when they got rid of Jrue Holiday. Everybody talks about the defense and the defensive mentality that Jrue Holiday brought to that team,
right.
but they never talk about how, yes, Giannis is the best player. But the captain of how that team flowed was on the court was through Jrue Holiday.
True.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
and you let go of that, but at the same time, you let go of that with the reality that we don't know what type of player Jrue Holiday was going to be coming back because of what happened to him and that team, but necessarily what happened, directly what happened to him in that playoff series against the Miami Heat.
Right.
Jimmy Butler kind of dragged him in a way that we had never seen Jrue Holiday drag before. And I don't know psychologically if he's gotten over that. If we're being very honest,
yeah,
look at what he's playing in Boston. That does not look like the Jrue Holiday that played in Milwaukee the last 4 years. It doesn't.
You're right.
He's still having, in my mind, an after effect of what Jimmy, the way Jimmy dragged him. Jimmy went personal with him throughout that entire series. You know what I'm saying? So
yes.
Even if he didn't stay, we don't know the Jrue Holiday that they would have gotten in return. But
True.
What they did get in return was more than just losing their defensive identity. Was the guy who guided the captain of that team on that court. So you're basically losing two coaches at the same time. But here's the other key. What you're inheriting is, yes, a top 75 player. One of the greatest overall players of all time. A player who has only been in one organization through his whole life. So he has to have time. It's not like he's like jumped from team to team, something like that. You're dealing with a guy who's been in the league 11, 12 years who's never been anyplace else. So there's going to be an adjustment period with him doing this, right?
Very true. Correct? Yes.
So give him time to adjust, but also keep in mind that as great as he is as a player, not only is he leaving home for the first time, he's going through personal issues.
Yeah, divorce, yes. Yes.
Yes, going through a divorce and for the first time separated from his kids.
Yes.
His kids have been in his life every day of his entire fatherhood. And now not only is he going through divorce for custody of that, but also being away from them on an everyday basis because he's in a whole nother town for the first time.
Yeah.
And if we think Damian Lillard is so robotic that that's not having an impact on what he's bringing to the table and him having all of that happen to him at once.
Yes.
He's dealing with professional and personal change on three levels.
Yes.
The parenthood level, the basketball level, the marriage level, all hitting him for the first time at the same time. Yet we're expecting this dude to play every day like he just did in this All-Star weekend. You wonder why he played the way he did over the weekend? This is the first time he hadn't had to think. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
First time he's just, man, this is so great. I don't have to think.
Yes.
I don't have pressure. I'm just out here just hooping. Like what we saw over the weekend with Dame Lillard was a guy finding 2 days of refuge from everything that's been his life for the last 8 months.
Yeah, like a pickup game. Just go have fun. Do what you do.
Man, can I not think about this?
Right.
And here's the thing. If he was able, and we don't know this, if he was able to have his kids with him just so he could see them, you know, for a full weekend and not have to run from game to game and, you know, just, hey, this is great. You know what I'm saying? Just to be with them.
Right.
Or just to have time to like, man, I don't have to rush to do anything. I could get days, you know. I could take all Friday off.
Right.
You know,
yes.
And I could take all Saturday off and just have to worry about, you know, the three-point contest when it comes later on in the day. I got days where I don't have to like, you know, just, I could just be, you know, I could just be.
Right.
Just to have that space. All that plays a role. And we always, everybody's bringing up mental health, man. Let's please consider the mental health of Damian Lillard when we start assessing what's not happening right in Milwaukee.
Yeah.
That's a big factor that it doesn't seem to me that anybody on both mainstream media, you know, broadcast media, professional media, or social media has taken in consideration when we're making assessments about the Milwaukee Bucks. And I'm like, that's, we all need to be thinking about all that as we speak about the 73 record from Doc Rivers being in. And let's also throw a fourth component in this whole thing about there's only so much one individual could do when you're taking all that in all at once.
Very
Doc
true.
Rivers is a coach, not a magician.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And if you take everything I just said, all the factors that are in play in Milwaukee right now, that's much bigger than the coach could change over in 10 games.
Very true.
And I didn't even mention Chris Middleton. You know what I'm saying? I ain't even throw him in the game.
Yes.
So, yeah.
Yeah, everything. They'll get it together. I think they will. Scoop, man, it's always a pleasure speaking with you. Respect out again in the future. Def, get updates on your adventures you're doing with your books. Always a pleasure, bro. Appreciate you.
Thank you. Can I throw one more thing out there? Because this weekend was kind of big about it, and I'm not big up on myself or anything, but there's another thing that happened that's pretty good on a project I worked on for a little while. In the Slam magazine, and the publisher, Dennis Page, we got it was announced over the weekend on Friday that Slam magazine will be inducted into the Hall of Fame.
Yes,
congratulations. In 2024. So yeah, so there's a lot of pride going in on that, and I'm glad to have been a part of that for 11 years in building that magazine. So, you know, getting, you know, seeing Dennis as a publisher get inducted, you know, and our attachment for working together for all those years and building something so special, it's a good thing. So you mentioned the other, you know, other projects. I'm proud of that one too.
Yeah, congrats on that also, bro. I forgot about that, honestly. Congrats on that. Congrats.
Yeah, thank you, man. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Always a pleasure speaking with you, bro.
Always, my man. Appreciate you having me on. Let's talk soon. Let's talk, you know, once the playoffs get in the thick of things and see what these Knicks going to do.
Definitely. I hit you back. Definitely. Enjoy the rest of your day. Thanks for your time.
All right, man. You too.
Yes, that was legendary sports journalist Scoop Jackson joining me. Thanks for your time.